Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Trevor Mountcastle and Tom Kim. This episode, we're speaking with Deb Schroeder, who is well known among, I think, many of the circles as a cruising aficionado, as well as many other things. Deb, welcome to the pod.
Welcome, welcome.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
So I'm trying to think if this is a we or an I. I thought TK might have met you prior, but I recall that we did catch up with you and met you on the Wonder of the Seas on our March 2023 cruise, which, by the way, wonderful ship. We had fun with that one. But I know that I've seen you in so many Facebook groups and so many other conversations. It's just sort of interesting, and I'm taking some of Tom's words here, but it's just interesting how the different planets sort of orbit.
Definitely. I think, Trevor, you and I were Facebook friends before we met in real life, and I recognized Tom on the ship. I literally got out my Facebook and like, I know that guy's face. And I was on Facebook scrolling through all my friends' feeds going, I know him, you know, but I couldn't place it. And maybe it was through Ty's feed, somebody's feed. I saw your picture. I'm like, okay. We have similar friends. That's why I recognize his face. But you know, you see people and you're right. Circles interlap, right? So you're not sure where you met people and you know, you try to place them somewhere. So I took the chance and that's when I approached you.
You know, the Miles and Points community, you know, it's a large community, but it's funny how small it is, really. Everybody knows everyone.
Exactly.
It's so true. It's so true. So before we get into things, could you just take a couple of moments and just share some of your background, sort of, you know, we know that you do Traveling Well for Less. Can you tell us about that? And can you just share a little bit more about, you know, your involvement in the community, just to sort of set the stage, so to speak, for our conversation today?
Okay. Yeah. So I got started in Miles and Points in 94 because my husband and I took a trip to Tahiti in Australia. We booked with a travel agent and she booked us in business class. And so when we got back, I saw all these miles in my American Airlines account. I was like, oh my God. And that also coincided with when American had that promotion with Kellogg's and Nutrigrain. So I was at the grocery store. I saw all the cereal boxes where you got 250 miles every time you cut the little coupon off the back of the cereal. And then I saw the Nutrigrain. I did not see the pudding cups, but I saw all the cereal. And so I'm loading my shopping cart with all the cereal. And it's just my husband and I. We didn't have any kids then. And he's like, what are we doing with this, right? And I donated all the boxes to church and sent in all the miles. But I didn't know anyone I didn't even know there was a flyer talk. You know, I didn't know anyone in this community. And so when he goes, okay, you need to quit doing this because what are you doing just spending all this money to get these miles? I mean, this is how new we were to Miles and Points. But that propelled me to do everything I could to earn every mile and point possible. And so kind of that's how we started on this journey. And I didn't find Flyer Talk until 2009 because I was cruising. I cruised before I did mileage runs. And so that kind of weird segue. And now I'm back into cruising again. So it's a little different. Also, that's actually how I started. In terms of the blog, I started that as I thought it was going to be a resume for my travel writing. But then I started posting deals and then it became a travel blog. So evolution kind of happened. It wasn't what I started out to make happen, but it turned into something good. So
that's incredible.
That's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's just interesting your pathway into this kind of hobby that everybody enjoys here, because it's interesting that your pathway included cruising very early on. That's probably one of the more unique stories, at least that I've heard, you know, in terms of how people arrived kind of at this place where they're so interested in, you know, all this miles generation and amazing maximization of redemptions and things.
Yeah, because when I started the casino programs, there weren't any limits on what you could charge in the casino because people were not doing the creative spending, so to speak. So the casino, they didn't even charge you when you used your credit card. There wasn't the 3% fee or the 5% fee. Nothing. So you could just use your card in the casino without any limitations. We'll just put it that way.
That kind of offsets for the fact that in the early days, there weren't any multipliers either, right? I mean, exactly. back in the day,
yeah,
you know, everything was 1X.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, all we had was Amex and we had the airlines, like Chase was, Chase didn't have any cards. Chase wasn't even around, I don't even think. I think like the earliest card then was like SPG or something. So we didn't have any of these great cards that we have now, but then we had the coins and we had different opportunities there. But I think like you guys know, you've been around for a while. Opportunities come and go. It's how you make them and what you use with them, if that makes sense, I guess. And you can find opportunities. There's so many opportunities out there and different creative ways to earn miles and points that people don't realize, and even standard regular ways that people don't think too much about as well.
Yeah, it definitely takes a different personality to sort of look at these things. For you to walk in the grocery store and see these points on a Kellogg's box and say, hey, I can turn these into something really good. That's just so cool. I mean, going back to 94, I don't think I was this involved in the game in 94. I think my father was, but he wasn't buying Kellogg's boxes. I love that story because it just shows the diversity. I mean, you've got the Kellogg's and the pudding to the coins to the casino spend before anybody really thought casino spend was a thing, you know, and then you get to the more modern things, which I was just looking at a post from a friend about vanilla reloads. Did you do any of those?
Oh, yes. I mean, I'm sure you probably have on your cards, but my boys were on all my credit cards as soon as they were born, because some of the cards you could put them on, you didn't have the date of birth qualification, like Amex has that, but like Citibank, they were on that. And so they would come with me and we'd go to Office Depot, Staples, because now we had three cards to buy vanilla reloads. And same with CVS. So we'd make our rounds. And if we ever sell our house, we live in a very miles and points friendly area, I'll just say. You don't have to drive very far to earn a lot of miles and points where I live. So,
you know, one of the things that we probably should explain to our listeners a little bit is, you know, from kind of the casino perspective, you know, that really is a really amazing manufactured spend play. Now, obviously, a lot more limits nowadays because, you know, people are a lot more concerned about things like, you know, money laundering and things. So casinos have a lot more eyeballs on when you charge chips in a casino, especially on like a cruise ship or something like that. Take a little bit of caution or just understand that there probably are limits. So don't be surprised if for some reason it stops working or your card is not allowing you to charge chips on your shipboard account and get chips or get balances on slot machines, because that is something that does happen.
And in fact, because of all the casino status matching and all the free cruises, they have clamped down on what can be done. Like before, you could charge to your account and not have to play. But I'm sure you guys found out from the Wonder Cruise that now, especially like on Royal Caribbean, when you charge to your onboard account, you have to play 50% of that voucher before you can charge again. And there is someone, I'm sure he's in the community, but I read this on another Facebook group, Carnival shut him down because he was loading gift cards to his account in excess of $20,000. And so now he is restricted to a cash-only account. So he can't even charge to his room anymore unless he puts cash down. He can't even use a credit card.
Would pigs get fat? Hogs get slaughtered.
Exactly. So you have to be smart and you know, you have to think about the long game.
Yes. So not to mention, you know, a lot of times, you know, you're leaving the country on these and you're kind of entering through a customs border and, you know, having more than $10,000 of currency on you is something you really should be declaring, meeting the letter of the law. So I personally do some manufacturer spending on cruises, but I usually keep it to a couple thousand dollars and I don't usually, you know, hit it that hard. I just figure there's more cruises out there to take. So, you know.
Very true. You see a lot where people choose not to report it, you know, because the 10,000 threshold or they try to split it. Well, that's just called structuring. And so I'm black and white. I like the rules. I will find the gray so long as it's within the rules, if that makes sense. But I'm not going to do anything that could jeopardize my global entry or TSA pre-check because let's say they stop you and you didn't declare. Well, now you've got this little mark and you know, next time you come up for global entry renewal, they could just say no and ban you. And then those of us who fly a lot, I mean, that would be horrible to not have TSA pre-check, right? Can you imagine having to stand that line with everybody else?
Well, and there are folks that have lost it even before renewal because they had, you know, an expired prescription or something to that effect. That's the one that scares the heck out of me because I use the old prescription bottles. And so there are days that I, depending upon the country I go to, I'll kind of go with the, because they give you such big bottles now when you get a 90-day supply. That's in the weeds. So let's kind of shift this a little bit closer to cruising. You've been cruising for quite some time. We've talked about trends on this podcast in the past. Between Tom and I, we don't have nearly the breadth of experience that you have. Could you share some thoughts about the trends that you've seen, perhaps, you know, a little bit from the, you know, the experience when you started, but your perspective of kind of how it's been over the last 5 to 7 years? Maybe that's the wrong timeline, but I'll let you kind of run with it.
Okay. So I started cruising in 1998, and I started with Carnival and Royal, and prices were kind of high then because they were cruises, right? And not a lot of people went. But, you know, we had that period of the, I don't know if we're allowed to use certain words, but where we weren't allowed to travel for a while, right? And so prices dropped and the cruise lines offered like crazy, ridiculous pricing on cruises, which I wish I would have known about because I would have taken advantage of. But now, because there's still so much of that revenge travel, you know, to use that buzzword, people have all this money that they couldn't spend during those couple of years. Now they're booking travel like crazy, especially cruises. And prices are sky high. I've never seen cruise prices this high before, especially like, for example, Royal Caribbean's Icon. Prices on that ship is out of control, at least I think.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And it's hard to imagine that families are going to be able to cruise more than once or more than a couple times on this particular ship. This might be one of those once in a lifetime trips for some families, because the pricing is so high. So, but I do think there's going to be a correction because prices can only sustain a certain amount. People only have a certain amount of money.
So that's an interesting one. I kind of want to pull on that thread if we could, right? We talk about a lot of destinations are sort of once in a lifetime because of the cost. Do you think that Royal priced Icon at that level because they wanted people to make it that aspirational, I'm going to save for that one time I'm going to take this cruise on Icon, kind of like what people do with the Disney cruises or a trip to the Maldives? Do you think that's an intentional thing? Or do you think that Royal saw the demand of Icon and just simple supply-demand economics?
That's a great question. I'm not 100% certain because in the last couple of years, there's been leadership change over at Royal Caribbean. So they're doing a lot of cost cutting and different financial strategies and implementing different things that they didn't in the past. So whether it's they set to make Icon more of that one of those, you know, once in a lifetime and price it on Disney level, or if they just, to use someone else's words, not mine, but like other frequent cruisers, went for the cash grab type thing, you know, because that's what's being said of this particular CEO. I don't know. I think they just realized they could, if they could get the rates, they're going to charge it, which makes sense. You're a business. You want to make as much money as possible. And Royal prices everything based on supply and demand. Their cruise pricing, as well as their excursions, their drink packages, and all the extra add-ons. Unlike Carnival, Carnival has like a set price for their drink package that it's the same rate regardless of when you buy it. But Royal, their rates for everything is really supply and demand based. So one cruise, you may pay like $170 a day for the drink package. But another cruise for the same length cruise, you may only pay $35 a day. It really, it's price driven based on supply and demand. So
it kind of sounds like Royal Caribbean is the Delta Airlines of the cruise world. It definitely feels that way. You know, Delta obviously is very, very well known for, you know, making a buck when they can. Loyalty be damned. Royal Caribbean, it feels at least a little bit you have a shadow of that. And they really have taken the opportunity to charge what the market will bear. And you're right, they're much more dynamic, which, by the way, can sometimes be in your favor because I've seen some of those prices for certain things where the demand is low and you're like, what? They're only charging like $10 for this or something? And you're like, oh, snap it up because it's not going to probably stay there. So there's a little bit of that also with Royal Caribbean, where I think you can, if you're price conscious and watch for things and understand what the prices are, that can be actually an advantage for you.
Exactly. And like some folks, like the longtime cruisers, they book years in advance. Like I have friends who are booked well into like, I think 2026, some of the sailings just became open. They're like booked that far in advance. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a lot of money put out, but they've got 20, 30 cruises booked all the way through because the pricing is low because you're booking early, right? And then as it gets closer, the price changes. So,
you know, I always felt like that advice about book early, I always thought that was total BS because I was used to getting, you know, last minute cruises, or there was a lot more of that discounting that would do after final sale date because they had distressed inventory. So that used to be a little bit more of a common thing, you know, where you could just kind of, if you had nerves of steel, you could swoop in and get a deal on something. And that just doesn't seem to be the case anymore, doesn't it?
No. And now with all the different changes, they have to submit the manifest to customs. I think it's like 72 hours in advance. And so you can't get that last minute deal that like the Floridians are used to, where they could just stroll up to the port and book a cruise right there. So yeah, in fact, some of them want to start a list for Royal to say, hey, call us if you have any open cabins. You know, they miss those deals.
The other thing that I think that they're monetizing a lot more is the whole Royal bidding, the bid for upgrade type of process. That also didn't used to be a thing. But now I think, you know, it used to be like, oh, go to the front desk and ask them if there's any cabins to upgrade into. I don't think that's good advice anymore because I think cruising has changed. The technology has changed. And now everybody's doing these, put in a bid for upgrading your cabin. And I think that's another way they're really monetizing. And I see Royal doing that pretty well. I've seen Norwegian do it. I've not seen it as much on Carnival.
Yeah, I don't think Carnival offers that. But touching onto the Royal Up thing, so one good tip that people don't realize, when you get that Royal Up offer, it doesn't necessarily mean that cabins are available. But when I get that well in advance of a sailing, I immediately go check prices. Because sometimes it's actually cheaper for you to just pay a higher cost to upgrade than to do the Royal Up.
What a good piece of advice, which I've heard many times. You're absolutely right. It's just better just to pay the difference in fare than trying to
gamble.
Yeah, to gamble. But, you know, it's probably true for airlines too. Sometimes, you know, people don't pay attention to what things actually cost and they think, oh, it's cheaper just to do this. And like, not always.
Exactly.
Yeah. So with that Royal Up, I've actually been impressed with that. We've done it twice. And I believe that even the second time, the first time was an absolute deal. Tom can correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, that was an edge case. I think your first experience of Royal Up was very much an edge case because you went from, I think, did we go from like an interior cabin to like a royal suite or something like that? It's something ridiculous.
It was a grand suite.
Grand suite, sorry.
It was one of the few times that you go from a small European hotel room where the bathroom is tiny, the room is tiny, and you actually get into a larger room, a larger cabin on the ship. It was a really unique experience.
That occupancy rate on that ship was also like 50%. So I think that was absolutely the edge case. That is, your mileage will definitely vary on that kind of situation.
The outlier.
Absolutely. Then the Anthem, though, I found that to be a very good value just based on our experience with, you know, having that balcony with so many sea days. I mean, it came in so reasonable that perhaps I might have saved a little bit if I'd gone and just paid the up or that sort of thing. But I think it ended up being like $135 per person. So it seems like in some cases, they're doing that really smartly. They sent the same thing with Wonder of the Seas, and it was just obnoxious. So it, like, again, they really seem tuned into that supply and demand. Mm-hmm. So you'd kind of implied some negative changes from the current CEO. I know that we've talked on the pod prior about going from 2 housekeeping visits to a cabin per day to 1. And also we saw, I don't even know.
Lobster gate?
It's limited to 1 lobster, right? In some cases, I don't even think they do lobster, right?
Sometimes they don't.
Yes. The short sailings, they don't do lobster. Like for me, I'm okay with the 1-time housekeeping a day. I'm all right with that. But the biggest impact I've seen is the food. They're doing this thing called provisioning now, how they restock things. Like I just got off a transatlantic cruise and the week before, because I did the week before the transatlantic and the transatlantic, they ran out of blueberries before we even got on the transatlantic and we're still in Miami. So they got a little bit, but not enough. And so maybe by day 5, we were completely out of any berries on the entire ship. And this is a 14-day cruise. So on this particular ship, they've got the smoothie bar. So no fruit smoothies at all, because all they had was bananas and vegetables. And no one wants that in a fruit smoothie, right? And then later in the cruise, we ran out of bananas and oranges. So how they're doing provisioning, because that was one of the recommendations by this new CEO, they're really fine-tuning the food, which I think is great because they waste a lot of money on food, but how they're doing it is not in the right area. Like there's still so much waste in the buffet that they could eliminate all those desserts that they put out and all the extra helping of food and make a little bit less and save the money there and maybe stock more bananas. Because it's not the first time I've been on a cruise where they ran out of bananas. When there are a lot of children, the bananas go fast. So, you know, this is just something that they, you know, I'm sure that the hotel director mentions to Miami. It's like, I'm sure they can take that into account because they know how many kids are on a cruise. I just don't understand why these kind of things keep happening.
By the way, what cruise ship were you on?
I was on the Oasis of the Seas.
You know what's so funny? My parents were on that cruise and two of my close friends. Yeah.
No way.
They were just on this. This is the one that to Barcelona, right from Miami.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I wish I would have known.
I wish I would have known.
I wonder if I saw them, but didn't know. Oh wait. Cause I met them on the Wonder.
You may have seen them. I don't know.
Pretty sure you saw them in the casino. Pretty sure you saw them.
You probably did see them in the casino.
It's probably like, these people look familiar, but why?
Such a small world.
This is pretty classic that we find out this, that you were on the same cruise with my parents and some of my friends, you know, on this podcast. Cause you know, that is Deb, by the way.
So, Deb, you've told us about a transatlantic. You've done a whole lot of Caribbean. I think you probably mentioned a European or two. Have you gotten to the South Pacific?
I have not done South Pacific, but we did that, you know, land back in 94. But in terms of cruising, we've done Arctic Circle. We've done Norwegian Fjords, Alaska. Have not done Africa. Definitely want to do Antarctica, but that won't be on like a mainstream. We'll do one of the smaller cruise lines. Royal is doing some trips up to Abu Dhabi, but you know, I've done that before. So it's hard because it's like you want to do these fun, interesting things, but then like other cruises, like they also offer like Thailand and Vietnam. But as you guys know, it's so much cheaper to go there not on a cruise ship. You know, so.
And it is interesting. I mean, those cruises out of like Singapore that go to Thailand and stuff, they're not the greatest ships. I mean, at least like Tom had that cruise out of Sydney to get to Nomiya, New Caledonia, which was interesting. And I think that was an Anthem class. But like, they're sort of edge cases, right? Because they might go as far as, I don't even know if they go as far as Tasmania. I mean, they certainly don't go as far as Melbourne. But
drink.
The reality is, I mean, I think there are a lot more challenging cases there for nicer ships in some of the farther afield cruise itineraries or, you know, more exotic countries. I don't know if we call Australia exotic.
I think you need two drinks because that was an organic Melbourne, you know, like I didn't even stage it, you know, that just came out just completely organically. So I think that's two drinks, by the way.
Okay. I don't know the drink rule and no one informed me because I don't have a drink sitting here.
This goes back a long way. By the way, I don't know. Some of the listeners may need to know a little bit about the history of this, but you know, back in the day when Trevor did the Savorosity observation deck, we play a little drinking game. I don't know if he was aware of this very early on, but you know, whenever he said Lufthansa first class, that was the drinking game. And more recently, I think we've changed it to Melbourne because Trevor is so good about doing it in the right pronunciation. And it's funny, even Sean Coomer, I think, has mentioned how he appreciates a Trevor's pronunciation. Yeah, it just seemed to be the appropriate drinking game word of the day, I guess, for at least for the podcast for this year.
And it's not something that our pod topics often kind of lend itself. But yeah, Sean did call me out on that. He was talking about Joe Chung's trip when he went to the South Pacific. He did not get to Melbourne either, unfortunately. He did get to Auckland.
Well, I did Australia too. I didn't go to Melbourne either.
I've only been to the airport.
Yeah. Well, I think I might have done the same cruise as you, Tom, because we went to New Caledonia and what is that?
Vanuatu?
The Mystery Island.
Oh, Mystery Island. That was awesome with the little airfield.
Yeah. Yeah. The one that you wouldn't even know was an airfield unless somebody pointed it out to you.
Exactly.
Yep. We did that on Ovation of the Seas last year. So that was fun. Now, I kind of had a question because, you know, one of the things that I really was excited to talk to you about was cruise loyalty, which is funny because, you know, cruise loyalty is so different than airline loyalty or hotel loyalty. First of all, it's lifetime, right? So you earn a status and you have it for the rest of your life. And quite honestly, there's some fanatics. I mean, you think miles and points people are fanatical and maniacs. What do you say to somebody who's getting 700 cruise points? And by the way, you earn a cruise point for every day you're at sea. So you, my friend, are a Pinnacle member, right? And I think this is something that I really want to hear about.
Okay. So as I mentioned, I started cruising in 1998. And so we did a gazillion cruises. So before 2009, I had over 100 cruises, but that was spread among Royal, Celebrity, Carnival, Norwegian, Holland America, Princess, and Crystal cruises, right? And so, because we had two ships out here on the West Coast, Royal Caribbean. I was diehard Royal Caribbean. I mean, I like Carnival and stuff, but it was all Royal all the way, loyal to Royal. And so they mentioned they were going to change the program. So at that time, they had like, I think Diamond Plus was the highest. They didn't even have Pinnacle. So we were three cruises, because you, back then, instead of points for night, you got credit for a cruise regardless of the length. So a three-night cruise got you the same credit as a seven-night or 14-night cruise. So many of us were doing short cruises. So we were three cruises away from the top tier, and they said they were going to make this new level, but we didn't have any ships on the West Coast, and doing a back-to-back, I never would have thought to do that. And flying back and forth to the East Coast, we just said, no, we can't do it. So then when they made the Pinnacle level, and Pinnacle was 700 points, and we were like 245 points, we were so far away. And I about killed my husband because I was like, we were so close, and now it's going to take forever, right? So that has been my barometer for everything. And that is how I measure stuff now. So when the period of time where we could not travel and cruise pricing was slashed to like ridiculous levels, like, I don't know what, $5 a day or something ridiculous, right? So when cruising started up again, I started back in 21, and I missed that whole double points promotion. And talking to people, I realized how many people jumped up tiers. Like, some people went from never cruising Royal to becoming Pinnacle in just that short period of time. Oh, did you do that, Tom?
I didn't become a Pinnacle, but I became a Diamond Plus member.
Crazy, because you jump so fast, right? So when I realized that and talking to all these people, I realized changes are going to come. You know, Royal's going to do some change, and we weren't too far away. So I told my husband, I said, I don't want to get left behind again, for lack of a better word. So I did this Pinnacle push where I actually paid for cruises so that I could get us to Pinnacle, because I saw the future, right? And so we did that, and I'm so glad I did that, because rather than increasing the points for Pinnacle now, they've made restrictions. So like, as a Pinnacle member, rather than get into all the details, the biggest thing for some people is suite lounge access and coastal kitchen on the Oasis and Quantum class ships, right? So because there are so many people cruising in suites, and the number of Pinnacles has increased, and they want to, you know, Royal won't tell you those numbers. It's a secret, right? So because there are so many Pinnacles now on some sailings, only the top 30 can get into those venues. So on the Transatlantic, there were 267 Pinnacles. So they only let in the top 60, and the cutoff was 1,300 points. So if you didn't have 1,300 points, you weren't getting in Suite Lounge or Coastal Kitchen. And so you had to go to Crown Lounge, which is fine. But that meant that the Diamonds could not get into the Crown Lounge from 5 to 8 p.m. for happy hour. So as you can imagine, there were problems.
And it's outrage.
It's on every ship. And so 3 days before a cruise now, Pinnacles will get a little letter saying whether they've got access granted or not access based on how many points they have and how many Pinnacles are on that sailing. So I kind of diverted off topic. So if you need to rail me back in, we can do that.
I just have to ask, do they distribute like a bronze Pinnacle little name tag versus a golden Pinnacle name tag for those that don't make the cut?
No. But yeah, there is a division. There are a group of newer Pinnacles who feel that if everyone can't get in, then no one should be allowed in.
How very egalitarian.
Exactly. One of those, I'm going to take my ball and I don't want to play type things. And then there are other folks who call themselves double Pinnacles and triple Pinnacles and stuff like that. Like, you know, within the Flyer Talk community, we have the distinction, I guess. But there's only one level. It's one level, and you have points, you know, just like in all the freaking Flyer programs. It's one name, and you have points based on what you do.
You know? Just you wait. Pinnacle Plus, it's coming.
I think people will lose their mind.
I don't doubt it.
They will totally lose their mind.
I mean, it's so funny. It feels like we're talking about an American Express Centurion Lounge or something, you know, about not being able to get in, you know?
Right, exactly.
It sounds similar.
It sounds so similar. The parallels are kind of amazing, but it is interesting because, you know, it's the ecosystem of elites. So interesting, especially with the Royal Caribbean. And it's almost a victim of their own success, you know, because what happened is they came back roaring so hard after the pandemic. And like you said, there are people who never cruise. The two friends that were on your cruise. They are people who did not cruise before 2021. Okay. And they are now Diamond Plus or Diamond. And that is how incredible cruising has become for some people, because once they try it, they're like, oh, I get it. And, you know, I think the trends are, especially with inflation, I think we were just talking about how expensive it is to go and dine out. I mean, just the fact that you've got your food included and your entertainment and your lodging, which are huge dollar amounts for vacation, and you got that all in one place, one cost, it's such a huge thing. There's no reason why it's no wonder why so many people are gravitating toward this type of vacation. And the downside of that is the elite ecosystem has been disrupted. And that pinnacle, which is, 700 points, 700 nights at sea, multiple years at sea, even for the people who are gaming it and staying in suites or staying in solo cabins, that's still multiple years at sea, you know, is what we're talking about. And there are 200 people with that status on one cruise, one ship of several thousand people. It's incredible to think how loyal and how dedicated customers are. The mania, the craziness of miles and points. It, you know what? It extends to cruisers just as much as people who love airlines and hotels.
What was even crazy, they do a President's Cruise every year, Royal does. So the one in July on the Lore, they had like almost 570 pinnacles, just pinnacles. So I don't know how many other top tier, you know, Diamond Plus, Diamond and whatnot, but just pinnacles. And that's not all the pinnacles. That's only the pinnacles who said, okay, we'll go on this. So it's just insane.
That's like on Allure, what is that, about 6,000 passengers? Is it, trying to remember now. So that's like nearly 8 or 9% of the entire cruise was pinnacle. The highest, most difficult to get. And, you know, after 700, that's just mind blowing.
It's just interesting to see cruise lines, airlines, hotel chains. I mean, they're all victims of their own success in the creation of this loyalty scheme. And it's interesting because it creates a situation of, shall we say, creating expectations that effectively become, let me restate it, expectations are resentment unimagined or unfulfilled.
Yes. And a sense of entitlement too.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. These expectations create that future resentment, because they're just never going to be able to live up to it. And if they want to try to live up to it, they have to create a Pinnacle Plus or something like that to be able to elevate the experience for their theoretical best customers. But leaving all those others behind that might have gotten just that rabid loyalty trying to attain Mount Olympus. But it's that constant catch-22. Do we want to talk a moment about if you've got any thoughts on any other cruise line loyalty programs, or if you have any kind of higher or top tier status with any of the other cruise lines?
I do, but Royal has the best loyalty program of all the cruise lines in terms of what you get for your status. That is why so many of us have remained loyal to Royal, because you get so much more. And this isn't to discount the other cruise lines, because the other cruise lines are great and they have wonderful programs. But what Royal gives their loyal members, like Tom's Diamond Plus, right? So he gets 5 drinks a day, and you get the buy one, get one specialty dinner. You get the free bag of laundry at five plus, you know, cruises of 5 nights or longer. So all these great little benefits that really add up. So if you're taking multiple cruises, 5 drinks a day, for most people, that's enough. You know, but for others, but even if you have to pay for a few more, that's fine, because you've already saved, you know, at $14 a drink, you've already saved $70 right there. That's a day. So all these little things really add up. And so the other cruise lines don't offer what Royal is offering. So once people realize the benefits, and you hear it, and as you talk to people, they're like, oh, I only need so many more cruises, because, you know, they want those free drinks. So it totally makes it worth it. And I also think, you know, because we kind of touched in a little bit with the casino, their casino loyalty program, I think, is the best as well.
It's definitely one of the more approachable, right? Like as far as with cruise lines, I feel like some of the other major cruise lines like Norwegian, like I think you have to be a much, much bigger spender to be able to attain a casino elite status, where I think it's attainable for a casual gambler on someone like Royal Caribbean, where I think if you go and you, let's say, spend, just enjoy gambling and spend a couple $100, you know, each session of gambling, not too ridiculous. I think that's probably more a normal amount of money for somebody who actually enjoys gambling. You could, you know, very easily attain, I think, a gambling elite status after maybe one or two cruises.
Exactly.
Very casino dependent based on the machines that they have, though.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, sometimes you're unlucky.
Speaking from personal experience, I mean, there are just some machines that are much more attractive to use. And if they're in short supply, it becomes cutthroat. I mean, I had a really awkward experience on the Anthem of the Seas where this woman and her husband were essentially like vultures waiting for me to get up.
There's a name for those people, I think. I forget what it is.
Oh, is there a name?
There's a name for that.
Yeah, actually, we call them advantage players. I don't necessarily know if because they want to play the machine.
There's a more derogatory term.
Oh, yes,
I think
yes.
The advantage player is a nice way of putting it.
I was about to say, that sounds like a real colloquial name.
The advantage players are the ones who watch what other people are doing in the casino. And if they see someone playing on a machine for a long time, they wait or they try to encourage them to leave so that they swoop in and hope to win the jackpot or whatever.
This was an advantage. These people lived at those machines. I just happened to wake up earlier than they did, and I got the machine first in the morning, and they ended up proceeding to stay there for like the next 12 hours. It was actually that machine that that you turned me onto on the Wonder.
Okay, the Wonder 4 Tower?
Yeah, exactly. There were only two of those.
Oh, wow.
So they were in high demand, yeah. But I mean, that really changes the experience, I think, and the enjoyment to an extent.
Yes, it does. There are some casinos that are probably a little bit more fun at sea than others because, you know, the mix of machines is kind of not great.
Well, and I found that Carnival, they have a different kind of program. They don't have an easily defined program like Royal, but Carnival, I tend to win more on Carnival than I do on Royal. I feel that the jackpots are more frequent on Carnival ships. You know, they don't have to be big jackpots, but just like majors and things like that. I think those come more often. So whether their machines are looser or I don't know. Yeah. But every time I'm on a ship, I win.
Yeah, and I also hear from Carnival is they're much more quick about comping you things. Like they'll give you a free dinner or they'll send you some wine or they'll send you something more quickly than Royal will. Royal, I think, is a lot more stingy about the actual onboard benefits and a little bit less stingy, I think, about giving you a free cruise or, you know, at least trying to give you a chance to show how much money you can lose. So
I think with Carnival, I noticed, like in terms of points, because we haven't touched on that, but when seeing other people on Carnival ships, so many people earn so many more points on Carnival ships than I've seen people earn on Royal ships. But I think because they don't have that structure, whereas Royal, you know, when you earn 9,000 points, you're going to get a junior suite. But Carnival, you earn 9,000 points. They don't really tell you what you're getting. You know you're going to get offers. You know you're going to get comps, but you don't know exactly what. But Carnival is nice in the sense that you can book multiple casino offers, whereas Royal, you only book as many as they give you and one per cruise that you've earned type thing. So.
Yep. So definitely there's some different approaches in how they've done things. Obviously, some of us probably in the Mazda Points community like the certainty. We like the rules, right? And so we can take advantage of them and know when we're right at 2,500 for prime status or 9,000 for what signature or masters or whatever it is, and leverage that obviously to our benefit in many cases. But Carnival is much more of a black box, as you said, although it sounds like they may have looser slots, which is not the first time I've heard that, by the way. And also maybe be a little bit more generous with kind of some of the onboard comps and things that they throw at you to keep you in the casino.
Exactly.
So as long as we're talking about gambling, you know, the funny thing is I think you're also a pretty good resource when it comes to casino gambling and loyalty as well, are you not?
Yes. So during that period where we cannot travel, Las Vegas was open. So I spent a lot of time in Las Vegas, more time in Las Vegas during those couple of years and probably my whole life, and we live very close to Vegas. So I earn status without status matching, which is bad. But now, because I've been living on cruise ships, all my casinos, or land-based casino status has been via status matching.
Interesting. I guess the cruises are getting the lion's share of your casino spend, I guess, lately.
Yes, they have. All my gambling has been on ships versus land.
So if you've got like MGM status, you'll get like a Royal or a I think it's Royal or Norwegian or Celebrity cruise offer.
For MGM.
Yeah. Do you get anything similar? Like, do you get offered suites or anything like at MGM hotels with your cruise status?
So like Royal partners with MGM. So you can match your status, but it doesn't go reciprocally. So you can match your Royal status to MGM, but you cannot match your MGM to Royal. So I have not matched my Royal status to MGM because once you do that, I feel that they put you in a different category. And I don't want to lose out on any comps and other perks that could come my way if I came status matching from a land-based casino, you know, another Vegas casino, or if I earned it on my own. I feel that because they're only matching cruise loyalty and not cruise casino loyalty status. So they don't really know what your ADT is and what your level of play is. So I don't want anything to mess up my possible comps and what offers I may get that way, if that makes sense.
So put a different way, you keep your stuff separate.
I do. Yeah.
And that makes perfect sense.
This is an interesting thing to just squeeze out or tweeze out here just a little bit, because it's interesting. The MGM partnership is very strange because it is the cruise loyalty component that you're matching. It's the Diamond Plus Pinnacle status that is giving you status with MGM, not your casino loyalty status, which is Prime, Signature, Masters, which is kind of weird why they did it that way. But the funny thing is, and this is something that's just come out, is they are matching your cruise casino loyalty with Hard Rock and the Seminole casinos, right? With the Unity program. That just came out, I think, as news recently. We don't have a lot of details about it because they're just starting that partnership. But that's another interesting thing that's happening, I think, on the Royal Caribbean side, is they actually have now essentially two different casino partners, depending on whether it's cruise loyalty or casino loyalty, which is kind of unheard of. It's kind of weird that they do it that way. And it'll be interesting what actually, so we don't have a lot of news for our listeners as far as what that actually means, but it's just interesting and definitely space to keep an eye out for and to understand what that difference is.
Yeah, they rolled it out on Icon and they, like you said, Tom, they haven't given any details, but I know for people who were on the first sailing, so when you were like, say, for example, you earn like the lowest minimum points, I can't remember if it was 1,200 or they made you go to 2,500. I have that photo somewhere that someone's shared with me. But in addition to the cruise that you earn based on the points that you earn on that sailing, you also earn nights at Hard Rock. So that's how the partnership's going to work. But I don't know any other details. And if you want, I can see if I can find that image and send it to you, because it broke down like if you earn X amount of points, you also got this cruise to choose from and then this also from Hard Rock.
It's something I'm sure they're toying. I mean, just with like everything, I'm sure they're doing their experimentation phase right now. And obviously Icon is a great place for them to experiment on. I mean, they probably have some really high value customers on Icon. It's definitely a place where they're going to see kind of, again, the edge cases of the people who are spending the most money, probably both in the casino and on the cruise. And obviously that's a very, very choice cohort of customers for Hard Rock. They're sailing out of probably Miami and not too far away from one of their casinos, probably their most famous and big casino with the big guitar tower or whatever down there. I think Fort Lauderdale, I think, is or somewhere around there.
I think Tampa or somewhere like that.
Or is it Tampa? I think they've got several casinos down there in Florida somewhere. So
they've got Seminole and then I thought they had another one, but that's not an area I'm expert. So I'll keep quiet on that one. So Deb, we've talked about a lot of different things on this episode. Is there anything that we missed that you wanted to share with the Travel Stories community or the Mileonomics community on cruising?
I would say don't wait. I know a lot of people have hesitated to do the casino status matches to get the free cruises because they're hesitant, they're not sure, they don't have the time or whatever. But there's going to be a point where those free cruises dry up because the cruise lines are already seeing that they're not getting the value from the cruisers because they're assuming that the cruisers coming in have the status because they're gamblers, not because they're travel hackers and they're status matching. So they're not getting the onboard spend and the spend of the casino that they were expecting. So at some point, those cruises will no longer be offered. So if you're waiting, go ahead and do those matches now, especially because some of the matches are ending soon, like the Wynn is ending on the 28th, Fontainebleau is ending on the 2nd, but get those free cruises now before you miss out on the opportunity, because I mean, we haven't had these many offers in a long time.
In other words, grab the brass ring when you see it.
Exactly.
And for our listeners, we're recording this in May. So when we say that, it's the end of May and early part of June, really, where a lot of these matches are going to be expiring. So other thing that's expiring probably around that time is kind of using points for like the Virgin Voyages. Like that's another interesting cruise redemption that is going to be limited time. And I went ahead and redeemed it right away, although I haven't decided which cruise I'm going on, because I really feel strongly that that's another one of those items where it's a good opportunity. Take it now because you don't know when it's coming back. And it may not come back for a long time.
Exactly. Well, we saw what happened when Greg visited Necker Island. Well, that once realized, oh my gosh, they use points for my special island. Well, that kind of killed it.
Oh, come on. Just get more points one way or another, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but
now instead of, what, 10 or 20 American Express Platinums, it's just like 30. I mean, that's all. Wait for a transfer bonus. You'll get there.
Yeah. I'm waiting for next year's episode with Deb where bloggers killed cruising. You know, I think that's going to be the
I was expecting to see it when I saw all these things. Well, they actually kind of did because it kind of messed up the whole, it messed up playing in the casino thing. That changed everything. But we can save that for your special Patreon listeners.
Oh, ooh, you're teasing our Patreon segment. Oh my.
Love it.
Wow.
Love it. So with that, I just want to put this one little caveat. So Tom and I are technically not bloggers. We're just podcasters. So we can't have killed anything. That's just the way podcasting is.
I was totally placing that blame on other people, not myself.
I agree. I just want to make that distinction clear for our audience.
You know, we're just lowly podcasters. I mean, how many, like the two people who are listening to this, you know?
Well, thank you so much for coming on. And we really appreciate you for hanging around for a Patreon episode. But for our listeners on the no annual feed, where can our listeners find you?
They can find me on my blog, which is travelingwellforless.com. I also have a YouTube channel of the same name. And eventually the cruises will be posted on there. Mostly it's just casino stuff.
It has been an extreme pleasure, Deb. It's so great having like-minded people on that love cruising. And it's just been a great pleasure having a conversation with you. It's been great.
Thank you guys so much. And thanks for letting me come on your podcast. Appreciate it, Trevor and Tom.
It truly has been a pleasure. Well, that's the show. Thanks for listening. And we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.